This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I'm raining it in.
We love America.
I like that laugh.
La, 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 la.
Number six, God is real. God loves you. God wants the best for you. Believe that. I do. Number seven, if you have to poop at a party.
Oh my God.
But you're
turn this off.
Because you're going to stink up the
bathroom. No, hang on, Caroline. Just a little bit more.
Lock the door. Sit down. Get all the pee out first.
Jesus.
Okay? And then once all the pee's done, poop, flush. Boom.
I thought you would like that part.
I'm mad. I thought this was just like a random pastor. That you were playing a clip from.
Well, in a way, you're right. It is a random pastor. That was Chris Pratt's God is Real, nine Rules for Living acceptance speech at the 2018 MTV TV and Movie Awards that ends with a stunning piece of Christian nationalism at the end. Do you remember that part?
Of his speech?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Do you want to hear that part?
I don't know. Here we go.
And?
Flush. Boom.
Oh.
Learn to pray. It's easy.
You play this on like double so speed at least. My God.
And
finally,
hang on.
Number nine.
This is
nobody
it.
Nobody is perfect. People are going to tell you you're perfect just the way you are. You're not. You are imperfect. You always will be. But there is a powerful force that designed you that way. And if you're willing to accept that, you will have grace. And grace is a gift. And like the freedom that we enjoy in this country, that grace was paid for with somebody else's blood. Do not forget it.
Oh my God.
It's kind of a masterstroke of like the freedom we have in this country, that grace was paid for with blood. Do not forget it.
Just like Jesus Christ.
It's the
same. Is Jesus Christ a veteran?
Oh, he served.
He was a troop.
Oh, he was serving up there. Wait, is that rude?
Kevin.
What? They can't see the gesture I just did. I'm sure he served.
You know, everyone's talking about how he's like going to transition to politics.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like...
Hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened. And I feel like just transitioning to being a pastor makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, well...
He'd absolutely crush. He'd make a lot of money.
Yeah, but...
And he'd have a job forever.
But he doesn't need to. He's still making a lot of money doing all this stuff.
Yeah. I'm talking about, you know, like in a few decades.
If he was washed.
Yeah. When he's older.
Yeah. But he might have a good long career. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to him.
Don't manifest that.
I'm not manifesting it. I'm just saying
both your fingers are crossed.
He might have a good long career. Please. Oh, good.
Star-Lord forever.
Yeah, they said he'd come back. He's going to come back, Caroline. Yeah, what's he doing? His next movie? The Garfield movie.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't bring that up.
Movie Heaven, May 24th.
Oh.
Him, Samuel L. Jackson. Nicholas Holt is John Arbuckle.
I can do that one myself if you don't want to be there for that.
No, I'm... It's kind of my responsibility in a way. I'm the one that put him there.
You're brave.
So, no, I need to face up to it.
Yeah.
And what I've done. But he's definitely pulling back. It's just Garfield movie. A movie called The Electric State. Anyway.
He's gearing up. Gearing up for something. Doesn't bode well.
I put him in there because perhaps one of the stars of the movie we're talking about today reminded me quite a bit of him in more ways than one.
The dad?
Yes. Yeah. Which we'll talk about.
Okay.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have good Christian fun. And we kind of have 9 rules for living for you tonight that we'll start listing off and come back to throughout the episode.
Yeah.
But one, I think my first one is be kind. You got to be kind. Be kind to everybody. That's the first one. And we'll do 2 through 9 later in the show. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the music, the movies, the entertainment made for and made by Christians. But we're not here to make a fun of you. And we're not here to make you go to church. But we are here to make fun of Italians, I think. And we're not here to take you from church. That's the thing we talked about last time. That we shouldn't
take me from church.
I want to go home. Hozier. Hozier.
Homesier.
Yeah. Might as well call him
take
Homesier.
Take me to dope.
We're
thanks for laughing at that.
Take the dope. Homesier. Take me to dope.
That's dumb.
You know what I'm picturing right now? Nathan what? Ely in his car on the way to his job,
like
listening,
riffing
like,
on that.
Yeah, I like that
for a while. Shout out to Nate. We love you, Nate.
We love you, Nate. And listen, we're here. Nate's a little angel in your life. We're here to talk about a movie called Ordinary Angels.
And Snow Baby.
Ordinary Angels, a movie that I'm doing the Amy Grant voice for. She did, Caroline, were you aware of this? She urged people to go see it on her Instagram.
I did not know this.
So whatever like publicity machine this is a part of, which even though it's not directed by them, it's an Irwin Brothers joint because it was produced by them, by Kingdom Story Company, which is sort of their faith-based production company that they have in conjunction with Lionsgate, which it was funded by the profits of I Can Only Imagine, which they did direct.
And they said, let's roll that in to the next investment. Can I make a note about their name?
Yeah.
Why didn't they call it Kingdom Company?
Well, you weren't on the board. You weren't there in the room. And if you had been, you could have.
Rule of life number 2, put Caroline on the board.
Put her on the board, whatever the board is, whether it's the HOA.
HOA.
Whether.
School.
Whether it's the surfboard.
Paddle.
Or whether it's the skateboard. Put
diving
on the board.
Get me on there.
Or it's the message boards.
I'll type it up.
Where she's perhaps speculating about what her favorite cartoon cat is. And maybe I have a different opinion.
You damn shits.
So Kingdom Come, which should be called Kingdom Company. They've produced I Still Believe, which is the movie of theirs we watched about Jeremy Camp, starring Archie and Shania Twain.
AJ.
Yeah, KJ Apa.
KJ. KJ52.
KJ52. The Jesus Music, which was the documentary about CCM. American Underdog, which we watched last year with our friend Adam about Zachary Levi and Kurt Warner and his faith-based story. Jesus Revolution, which we watch with our friend
Kevin,
Sterling.
We are like their demographic at this point. Like if they were to create a perfect audience member, it would be us.
I know.
We've seen every single one. There's like, if there was like a punch card, we'd get a free movie. This is crazy.
You know, I'm looking at the returns here. American Underdog made for 25 mil, only made 26 mil, which means it probably lost a little bit of money. Jesus Revolution, which is Fraser Crane is running Calvary Chapel in the 70s.
I love gays.
And Lonnie Frisbee is not gay. He's just weird. And he had to go. Why?
To go
don't talk to
away.
Us about it.
He had to go to the farm.
Don't ask us about Lonnie. Lonnie went where he could throw the Frisbee with a bunch of other
Lonnie
Frisbees.
We liked Lonnie, but Lonnie wanted to go. We didn't kick him out.
That was made for 15 mil, made 54 mil. So that was way more profitable. Maybe that's a COVID thing too. I don't know.
You think they donated most of that to AIDS research?
Yeah, I think it went straight to whatever, yeah, charity in association with
Psych,
it.
It's going to go to Ordinary Angels.
And then, now we didn't talk about this, Caroline, because it has not come out yet. It's called The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, directed by Dallas Jenkins, based on the children's novel of the same name. And Dallas Jenkins created and was the director of The Chosen, which is a TV show about Jesus. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen it like on the AMC app. There's always, you can watch The Chosen in theaters if you want to. Caroline, this is a movie starring Judy Greer.
Judy Greer?
Lauren Graham as the narrator. And Pete Holmes.
Lord, take me now.
So we got that.
Pete Holmes?
We got Pete Holmes in the cast.
Pete Holmes?
They have three movies in 2024 coming out. Ordinary Angels, which we watched, Best Christmas Pageant Ever, and a movie called Unsung Hero. The film follows the Smallbone family coming from Australia to America.
I saw the trailer for this when we went to go see the movie.
I didn't see the trailer for this.
Oh, you didn't?
But you know it's about Rebecca St. James.
They never say her name in the trailer.
That's so funny.
Not once. So, but they're like, and they're about to say it, and like, welcome to the stage. And it's like, Mom, I'm going to be, I don't know, whatever.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Rebecca St. James?
Joker. So I was like, that's so funny, because I was like hastily Googling it in the theater and still didn't figure out that it was Rebecca St. James until right now.
There's already a little single out for it for Unsung Hero. It's a cover of a song. So
the wind is moving, but I am standing still. A life of pain.
You know the song.
Not allowed to lean on. I need your light to help me find my place in this world. My place in this world.
So it's a cover of My Place in This World by Michael W. Smith. By For King and Country. So
see this in the, wasn't this in that camp movie we watched? That camp musical?
Yeah, this song was in it. It was the duet between the two kids when
was
they were
that
on the
also
dock.
An Irwin Brothers movie?
It was not. No.
How weird.
Different, right? Wait, I want to play my favorite part of this song real quick, which I have listened to before, unfortunately, which is For King and Country is doing their 2020s pop Imagine Dragons thing on it. And they're doing like the soaring pop anthem thing. And then they bring it down here. And
looking for a reason, roaming through the night.
There he
to
is.
Find my place in this world. My place in this world.
Wow.
The wizened old man singing in an octave lower.
I need your light to help me find.
Okay, that's so crazy. Because as this was going, I was like, we gave Smitty so much shit for going to space in his last album. These guys are doing it. And we're like, it's just pretty good. He has pop anthem.
He
and
went then, to space. He was a little spaceman.
Little space Smitty.
Oh, these days.
But maybe he got his little hands on this song and produced it.
And they are such little hands, aren't they?
Beautiful little hands.
Candace Cameron Bure is in this film. Caroline, we got this to look forward to. Very soon, April 26th, it's coming out next month.
Wow. Huh.
And then, of course, next year, they have a movie called Unbreakable Boy, which is about...
Unbreakable Boy.
Which is also based on a true story about a kid with brittle bone disease and autism. His father, Scott, always keeps him happy. His father, Caroline, is, of course, played by Zachary Levi.
Damn. How did Judy Greer get caught up in all this mess?
Judy's got bills to pay, too.
Get her out of there.
I mean, I assume Hillary's got bills to pay as well.
Yeah, but this was at least good.
Well, we'll
get into it.
Yeah. So, yes, Kingdom Story Company. And rule number three of life is whatever it is, we'll get into it. Whatever it's going to be.
We'll get into it.
But
it's like Pete Holmes.
Pete Holmes starring a faith-based film. Time's a flat circle, isn't it?
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dang.
I think so.
Everything just comes around. Wow.
Oh, boy. I kind of am ready to talk about the movie.
Yeah, so, let's do it.
Okay, well then let's just throw it a break. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive into the topic. Dive into the snow, if you will. Caroline, this movie is a 2024 release. It's one of two movies I've seen that have come out this year. The other being Madame Web.
Dang.
I've seen no other 2024 releases.
Really?
No.
Wow, what's going on?
Well, I'm catching up on 2023.
Okay.
I think so far. I'm catching up on 2023.
You've seen those in theaters?
Mm.
The 2023 movies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
there's a bunch of foreign films I hadn't seen from last year that are still playing.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's kind of a dry time, though. Like, it's
dry time.
January and February is usually, it's what people call dump year. It's usually when the studio's like, we don't want this. We don't think it's going to do that well. Whatever. They'll put it in the dumping grounds of the first 2 months of the year. And then they start putting out their good stuff in March.
Mm.
And that's usually what it is. But even more so with the strikes of last year. With like the writers and the actor strikes, they had nothing to go. What are you thinking about? Dumpuary? God damn it.
I call it Dumpuary too.
Okay.
For different reasons.
All right. Dumpuary.
You can see the one little stupid cog in my brain just sitting on that.
Yeah. Well, then you started turning you red, talking. Holding in like a fart laugh. In your head butt.
I don't have fart laughs. That's a rumor.
You're crying. So this was originally slated to come out last year in October, not in Caroline Ely Presents Dumpuary. Dumpuary, Caroline's version.
TM.
God, good grief.
Okay, just give me a second.
Yeah. Man, we threw the commercial at the wrong time, as it turns out.
Okay, I'm good. Okay.
She's not good.
I'm good. I'm good. Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, I'm going to bring Smitty back if you don't.
Okay, all right. No. It's okay. It's okay.
Here we go.
I've got this. No, I'll be fine. I'll be good. Okay.
And just, we'll be, rule number four, don't call it Dumpuary. Man. Well, I did it again. I violated rule number four. Don't say dump
you
your.
You said it. Okay. What were you talking about?
Oh. We were talking about when the movie came out and that there's not that much going on right now.
Not that much going on. dry zone.
Yeah, it's a dry zone. Except for one loud, wet section of Caroline's apartment. There's something wrong.
No.
Your impending motherhood.
Not good.
It's not changing you. It's just making you more of who you are.
It's concentrating everything up in my brain. There's not enough blood flow. Okay.
It's a dumping ground for movies that they don't think are going to do well.
Okay.
Or like, you know, the beekeeper.
Dumpuary also kind of works for February, too.
Right. It's for January and February.
Oh, okay. It's banned.
That's all Dumpuary, basically.
I agree with that, too, because I think those 2 months, don't like them, just in general.
Just as months, nothing to do.
Merge them into 1 month and call them Dumpuary.
Dumpuary?
Dumpuary.
Oh, Dumpuary.
Yeah.
There should be 11 months in the year. So yeah. It goes Dumpuary, March, April, May, June. No other combos? Because I think we should combine July and August.
No, I really like July as a standalone month. August is whatever. Yeah. You can combine August and September, I think.
Well, I think we're burning a second service right now of like the 12 months ranked. Or like which month is which apostle or which Enneagram or whatever.
Yeah.
It was supposed to come out in October of last year.
Oh.
And then another movie got announced kind of short notice. And they were like, oh, fuck, we got to move. Do you remember the movie?
No.
It was Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. And they're like, there's no way.
Really?
We're clearing it. You can have it. They shot this movie like 2 years ago. It was shot back in 2022.
Whoa.
So it'd been long in the making. It's based on a true story. Ed Schmidt.
An extraordinary true story.
An extraordinary true story, which like now all of these are. Like think about all the Kingdom Company movies. Now you're thinking Kingdom Come, aren't you?
Right, yeah.
All right.
But you said it like
and
that.
They're all based. Yeah, I guess I did. And they're all sort of based on true stories, right? It's, you know, it's American Underdog, right. Jesus Music, Jesus Revolution.
I guess they're kind of like, you know, this is the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Why change it? They're so rich now because of these movies.
Yeah, so they've settled into the formula. And this movie stars Hilary Swank. And Alan Ritchson, were you familiar with Alan Ritchson before?
I was not.
So most people know him as Jack Reacher on the TV show Reacher on Amazon.
Yeah.
Dads love Reacher.
He's jacked Reacher.
He's jacked Reacher. And he is an enormous man. He is...
He's gorgeous.
He's quite hot is the thing.
He's like crazy hot for this part.
Yeah, which is like, this is always the case of like anytime it's based on a true story and you're casting actors for it. Obviously, they're going to be more attractive than their real life counterparts because they're actors and the real life people are
right.
real life
and we
people.
Don't want to see ugly people.
And ugly people are not allowed.
They make me throw up.
They make
throw up straight in my Dune Worm bucket.
Popcorn buddy. And but in the case with this, I did want to talk to you about this and just to like synopsize it a little bit. It's based on a true story taking place in 1994, 30 years ago. In Louisville, Kentucky, a hairdresser rallies the community to help a widowed father save the life of his critically ill young daughter after Louisville is hit by a major snowstorm during a cold wave in 94, in January of 94. So the events of the film more or less happen. The real names are used as the characters' names, etc. So it's one of these. It was in development for forever.
Oh, really?
The first person to say, we need to make a movie of this. Do you know who this was? Did you notice this person as the EP?
No.
It is someone whose voice we hear on every single episode of this show. The
space between. What?
Dave Matthews is a producer
Dave
on
Matthews?
This movie. Yes.
Whoa.
For whatever reason, he identified.
Gotta keep the 90s alive.
Yeah. It's like, well, if it's 90s, they're like
golden years.
So he's got EP on that. This was in development hell for forever.
Wow.
For whatever reason. So it changes a bunch of different hands. Kelly Freeman Craig, who wrote and directed Edge of 17, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, has a co-writing credit on this.
Huh.
So it has really good pedigree just based on how long it's been
yeah.
in the works. So they finally get it made, get production going, cast Oscar winner Hilary Swank, two-time Academy Award winner Hilary Swank.
Giving it her Hilary Stank.
Puts Hilary Stank on it for sure.
Do you think it was supposed to be Julia Roberts?
Well, this is the whole thing, because the character of Sharon in the movie, one, I texted Alyssa immediately and I said, they made a movie about you. On two levels. One, the Sharon of it all. And two, it's about a young girl that needs a liver transplant.
Oh, true. True. Yes.
The Alyssa Sabo story.
That's so true.
And two, this is very, we all saw Erin Brockovich. What if we did Erin Brockovich?
You guys
again?
Liked her.
Now, what if you didn't see her boobs even a little bit? Because that was a huge part of that person's wardrobe.
But all the hair.
Mm-hmm.
And all the swagger.
Yes, and an Academy Award, a terrific actor to play her. So there's a lot of juice behind this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I do kind of want to talk about it in the context of like the arc of these faith-based movies.
Yeah.
And then on its own terms. How did you watch this, by the way? What were your viewing conditions to see it?
Viewing conditions were good. I was at the Americana, of course. There were four other people in the theater.
Evening showing,
rainy night.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly was shocked anyone else was there.
Wait a minute. What time?
I went at 5. I thought you went in like the middle of the day.
I did.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell you this.
What?
That would be my first of two movies that day.
Oh my gosh.
My second being Madame Web.
Oh, so you were there?
Which
probably.
I saw at the Americana the same night.
That's
you
so
were
funny.
There.
Oh my God.
And I was there at 6 because I, of course, got dinner at the Cheesecake Factory before. So we were there at the same, we ships in the night.
Damn.
We just missed each other.
Oh man. I would have loved to stop by Madame Web.
I know.
Leave this movie.
You could have just like joined it afterward and been like, hey, what's going on? Is she wearing the sunglasses yet? So we were there. Wow, that's so funny.
That is funny.
And it was one of those things, I said this last time, and I know I said it the time before, but it's like, why did we watch these movies alone? And the reason this time was truly for scheduling.
Yes.
So that was, like, I would have watched it with you. But for this stupid Small Boners movie or whatever it's called with Rebecca St. Joker, we got to watch that together.
We definitely can't.
We have to plan out like 5 weeks in advance.
I agree.
Which is now. I gotta watch it with you.
It looks tough too. So yeah.
I watched it on a Monday matinee. This movie, Ordinary Angels, I watched on a Monday matinee at Burbank. And there was more than 3 people in the audience.
Wow.
There was like maybe 20
wow.
or so.
That's a big group.
All above the age of 45.
Okay.
And
hanging
I,
out.
I was, yeah, hanging out. A lot of older couples in the mix. Two women were having the time of their life watching this. They were laughing.
Responding.
All the kind of strong-willed Southern charm of the Sharon Stevens character they loved so much. So
heard that.
We watched this solo, and my thought for the first like two-thirds of the movie is like, this is fairly, to put too fine a point on it, ordinary. It's pretty run-of-the-mill hokey. It's not anything interestingly bad. Except there were a few things that I wanted to highlight. One, the casting, I think, is cuckoo in a few ways. Because as we were saying, Alden Richson, who people know as Reacher, he's in the Fast and Furious movies, and he's got a very interesting off-screen life, which plays into this movie quite a bit, which we'll get into.
Okay.
But he is such a mountain of a man that it is almost like an Arnold Schwarzenegger thing where... He's not at an Arnold Schwarzenegger level of stardom, but him being in something, it's like for them to not address like, hey, you're like an insane looking hot monster guy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh yeah, I work on roofs. But it's like, no dog, you like are the hottest man in a 3,000 mile radius.
Yeah.
And also you're like 6'10" at least. And everyone's just cool with this.
Built. Yeah. Yes. Just crazy.
And he's just... towering over every single person in this movie.
Uh-huh.
He has a mother who looks like his sister in the film.
Oh, yeah.
That feels like Nancy Travis plays Barbara, his mom.
That's a great point.
And so from the jump, I'm like, my brain's a little squishy from just that part alone. I think Hilary Swank is like decently cast in it. But this is a faith-based movie in which faith is not that big of a deal in it.
And I think benefits from that quite a bit. And I have to say, actually, for a faith-based film, for an Irwin Brothers film, the heroes are surprisingly complex, you know, nuanced. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but even just a Hilary Swank's character and the reasons why she does what she does are complicated and aren't just like, well, God is good, you know, like, gotta help out or whatever, or like, we're all broken here, you know, nothing like that.
This is what I find so interesting about it too, is because this is a weirdly, you would think for something like this, they would take whatever real life event and then imbue it with a lot of Christian ethic that was governing it.
Well, probably make the dad the main character.
Yeah.
Him not being a believer after his wife died. Cause like, how could God do that? And then like his faith.
And there's a little bit of that.
Ultimately like brings, and it like, there is a little bit of that, but he's not the main character of the story the way Hillary is or Sharon is.
No. And they are portrayed as truly weird people in some ways.
Yeah.
That feel a little bit true to life in the sense of the basic story of it is we meet his beautiful wife who dies immediately.
We go straight from like delivery room holding her baby to bam.
We're pulling the plug in literally 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And brutal. So she passes away. Here's the thing about the real life version of the film too. In real life, his wife passed away and he had three daughters. And one of his daughters passed away as well. So
with her? Or just from her, from another illness?
I forget what kind. I think it was from a similar illness.
Oh my God.
But it was like, it was a lot. So it wasn't just her and the two girls. There were three girls and then one
passed away. Oh, how awful. And they were like, that's frankly
too bleak.
Too much.
Too grim.
Damn.
And
this poor family.
Yeah. And so they edit that out of the movie for whatever storytelling purposes. And it picks up from Hilary Swank is a rootin' tootin' Southern lady.
Just
having
absolute
fun,
slob.
Doing coyote, not coyote ugly, maybe
coyote
like
ugly.
Coyote mid, perhaps. Where it's like she's dancing on the table, but she's not going to show you. Don't worry about that. She's just like, she has an alcohol issue. And she sees this story in a newspaper. And she's like, well, I got to go to that funeral, which is odd behavior, which is very strange for a person to do.
She's still like hungover from the night's like bender too.
So she inserts, the movie is a push pull of she inserts herself into this family's life and is like, I got to raise money for this little girl. And I don't know how factual this part is, but like she has a fundraiser and doesn't tell the family about it until after she's raised thousands of dollars. She does it through her hair shop. And the whole time, the like tension of the movie is the dad is too distant, internal, whatever the case may be, to openly accept help from this person. And she's like, I'll do anything. I'll help you out, blah, blah. He's like, we're good. And then he's like very hesitant, but eventually lets her in a little bit. And they have this like interesting push-pull. And the dad, as he's portrayed in the movie, is not a very active character, not even a very quote-unquote likable character other than he loves his daughters and he takes care of them. But he's not necessarily portrayed as very, very smart or very engaged.
Savvy.
Yeah, very savvy. And even things like, oh, maybe I'll do a roofing company thing. She's like, all right, let me Aaron Brockovich it up and here's what you need to do here, 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 and here.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay. And it's so it's interesting, even from like a very basic gender perspective, to portray that of like, this guy's kind of a disaster who needed this person, an ordinary angel, if you will, to help him out.
Yeah. And he was like, took great care of his daughters and would like get to them to the hospital. But other than that, had almost like no plan. And also like, let's be honest, like he's a broken man. Like his wife has died. His daughters are like on the brink, you know?
Yeah. So you get it.
You get it. It's not like, oh, what a loser. You know, it's just like, and you know, I think there's a great deal of like pride and wanting to like keep things in the family, which is maybe cultural too, you know? So you understand it.
Yeah. Kentucky in the early 90s. And he he has his mom's help, and she's always at the house. So there's a lot of like most of the movie is problem solving of, oh, how do we pay for these medical bills? How do we get her up the list? And there's all these horrifying and I did think, and I hope that it wasn't too much to watch as like a mother to be of like, oh, the little girl vomits blood on a children's book. And
dude,
he's just like caring for her in the hospital all the time and by her side, yeah, and doting on her. And it's just like very intense stuff. And I'm sure was obviously even more intense in the real life version of it. And then the last third of the movie is kind of this extended almost action sequence of the community coming together to help get her the liver that she needs.
Get her airlifted to the hospital because there's this great, you know, timer built in that like if an organ becomes available, you only have 6 hours to get the kid there and use it and put it in their body before the organ like basically just is not viable anymore.
Yeah. And the nearest hospital is in where they can do this is I think in Omaha, Nebraska.
Right.
Which is like 700 miles away. So they would have to drive or fly or blah, blah, blah. And then the day that it happens is the worst snowstorm of all time. So this is what is so interesting to me about the movie is that the solution is not actually God.
No.
In this movie at all.
Yeah.
And they do set up these things that like, obviously, most of the people behind the making of this movie, or at least some of the key players, as we've seen in other more evangelical, which is analogous with like right-wing values, they believe maybe differently in like social problem versus social solution as far as what's outlined in this, which is to say there's two major forces in the movie. One is the evil of the American healthcare system. And then the second is the force for good, which is not the church.
Right.
It is the general community, church members.
And kind of this
are a part
one
of that
woman.
Yes.
Who is pushy.
Yeah. And it's probably like has her own issues and kind of weirdly codependent. And they outline like, yeah, she's doing this for this family, but her relationship with her son is all messed up. And they don't, whatever the real version is of that, they don't overly sanitize it. I mean, there's like a little reconciliation at the end. But they're outlining these two things where it's like the American healthcare system is really predatory and will bleed families dry. And also what eventually ends up being the solution is not through the power of prayer. It's not through the power of faith, other than these like kind of vague abstract ways that anyone would say it of like, well, you gotta have faith
or like we gotta help each other or whatever. Yeah.
The most that they come to with is there's this scene where he visit his wife's grave and his daughter's talking to him and she's like, do you want to talk to God again? And it's very much Mel Gibson in Signs where it's like his wife died, he lost his faith, and now he's regaining it in some fashion.
Right. At the prompting of his kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is like very much the outline. But the real force for good is the community of people. So it's so interesting for, not to be too binary about it, but to have this movie where these are lefty values.
Yes.
Medicare for all, and then the idea of like social good that isn't inextricably tied to religious institution.
Yeah, or one like brave Christian,
mm-hmm,
you know? There also isn't a, and you kind of said this, but I think is like good to mention too, of like in a lot of these movies or a lot of these like inspirational Christian movies, there's a miracle that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be very, very, very convincing because like we'll tell you all the circumstances of like why this shouldn't have happened or why all the experts and doctors said it was impossible or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it happens. And that is simply proof of God, period. You know, and there is no miracle in this either. There is no intervention on God's part to make any of this happen. In fact, you could even argue God slowed it down quite a bit by sending a snowstorm. You know, like all of the usual markers of like God's, the proof of God's intervention in this story on the behalf of people of faith or people who need to come back to their faith is non-existent also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a critic named David Ehrlich who did a write-up of this for IndieWire, I think. And he said, it's a faith-based movie, but not really in the grand tradition of it. It's more like the faith of the in the community. Mm-hmm. And it kind of it functions that way at the end. Yeah, it is the faith in the community, which I think there's a lot of movies that kind of function on that as like the sort of Deus Ex Machina or the denouement. And there's something particularly touching about that for me when I see it, where unfortunately there were parts of it that were kind of interesting, and the core relationship that we're talking about was fascinating to me in some way. But then the last third, I was like, I got a little emotional watching it. I thought it was genuinely touching.
It was.
I thought it was genuinely sweet.
Yeah.
And kind of what they did. And that's usually what gets me in movies now, is not like when sad things happen, but when people are nice to each other in ways that aren't like particularly motivated by, because you're my brother and I love you. But it's just like, no, because it's what we have to do, you know?
Yeah.
And like collective good and social good for one another. So it's just fascinating that it exists in this form. And I'm even more fascinated by it after watching and listening to some interviews with the producers of it, which from watching the film, you would maybe not impute a lot of religious motive to it. And when John Gunn, the guy who directed the movie, talks about it, he's very much doing the Switchfoot thing of like, well, I mean, I don't think of it as a faith-based movie. It's some, you know, hope, redemption.
Yeah.
I just like a good story, you know? And to be clear, his resume, as far as like writing and directing is, he wrote, I Still Believe, American Underdog, Jesus Revolution. He directed Ordinary Angels and The Case for Christ. So this is his wheelhouse, right?
Yeah.
But he's still like, yeah, good stories. Listening to the Irwin brothers talk about it, and the real Sharon Stevens in real life. I listened to one podcast where they were talking about it. Because the whole thing, what the title's alluding to is like, there's just ordinary angels everywhere. Like, ordinary angels is sort of a slang or moniker for, it's just other people. It is your community. It is society. It's people coming out to shovel the snow, and I have a helicopter so I can help you fly out, and I got this guy who has a private plane and they're going to clear it, and I'm going to talk to the guy at the flight. Like, it's like all these people. And if one of them been like, nah, I'm tired, then it would have fallen apart and Lil Michelle would not have gotten a liver. So it's outlining that the way that these people, the Irwins and Sharon in real life, talked about in this podcast, they were like, well, we really wanted to show people why the church is good.
Oh, what?
So fascinating. I think this podcast is called The Prayer Cast. I was listening to it this afternoon. And they were talking about, like, you know, people associate the church with bad stuff and we want them to associate with good stuff. And Sharon in particular talked about it as like, you know, we're on a mission here and a mission to blah, blah. Because in the movie, it's like, ah, you know, I just felt compelled to. I don't know. I don't really understand it. I'm kind of doing an Alyssa voice right now. But in the interview, she's like, yeah, that's what we're here to do. And we're here to save lives.
To like redeem the reputation of the church.
Yeah. But the final product of the thing that they're making, to me, does not reflect this.
Perhaps they like misled her into believing that was going to be the case.
Maybe.
In the movie, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
The only thing the church does in the entire movie is literally open up the parking lot for the helicopter.
Which is where the helicopter
That's
lands.
It.
Yeah.
They don't raise money. They don't check on the family. They don't bring food by. Nothing.
Yeah. And this is always the argument against, you know, modern era liberalism, socialism, progressivism, is like that stuff that society should not do. There should not be governments that do that. It's the Ronald Reagan, the most terrifying words are, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. That should be what you do. Like,
the church does.
That should be what the church does.
Yes.
That should be like
nonprofit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though they're not good or consistent or particularly helpful.
But it's outsourcing it to philanthropy. Mm-hmm. And I guess in that way, it is aligned of like, there's a scene in this movie that I have to imagine was based on real life because it was so outlandish, where Sharon, as played by Hilary Swank, Erin Brockovich is the fuck out of the board at the hospital.
That was crazy.
And talks to them, and she's like, they have all these medical bills and they can't make their payments and blah, blah, blah. And she gets the debt of $400,000+ erased completely. So it's sort of saying, like, on one hand, it's saying the American healthcare system is bad. And then the solution is a sort of individualistic.
Yeah, like if you have enough stick-to-itiveness, like you can get your debt erased by convincing them.
If you're Hilary Swank, maybe you'll pull yourself out by your bootstraps.
Yeah, if your story's sad enough.
And you're Southern, like, I don't take no for an answer.
Well, part of the like horrible curse of that medical debt was so much of it was from when his wife had died.
Mm-hmm.
And so that had rolled over and then into his daughters. The oldest daughter also had to get a liver transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And the youngest daughter. So it was like all snowballing. And I think that was the only way she was able to argue it. And she has some argument like, you're basically telling this little girl, like, because your mom's death was so expensive, you have to die too.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true.
Yeah.
And like,
which is how the system is
kind of crazy. It worked. And it's so, I mean, we could do a whole sidebar about how like horrifyingly disgusting like medical debt is and our medical system and everything. But it's just so sickening that like there are people with also like hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical debt, but they don't have a sweet story or a particularly sad story that's convincing enough for a hospital board
mm-hmm.
to change their mind. And so they just have to deal with it.
Yeah. So at one end, it is outlining a very realistic, very common systemic issue, but then presenting a very pat solution, but it's given a sort of valence because it did happen and it was
it
true
did happen,
for one
but it's
family.
So unique to this one family.
Yeah.
Also a white family, which I think is pertinent.
Sure.
And I think it's pertinent to how much goodwill there was for little Michelle. Not that she didn't deserve it, but this is a little cute white girl, you know? And so the community was ready to jump on it and help her completely. No questions asked. No one had to question whether this girl deserved it or not, you know?
Yeah. I think I was really puzzled at the end of the movie that it wasn't more strong in its Christian didacticism.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really is just community oriented at the end of the day, as far as like what will help. And depending on the... There's some magical, like, yeah, depending on the kindness of strangers, and I hope you have your own Sharon or Erin Brockovich. And
yeah, but if you don't, like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
And also, like, you mentioned this earlier a little bit, but I really did think it was super interesting that they talked about Sharon's altruism not being totally selfless. And mm-hmm. I feel like that also, for the most part, isn't really shown in Christian movies, where you do have this like kind of miracle worker person who comes in and like has a good attitude and like loves God, you know, and is going to help you and your family get out of the dumps and like trust in him again or whatever it was. She's like still an alcoholic while she's doing all of this. She is not in recovery, really. She's not really taking care of herself.
She gets drunk in front of the kids.
She gets drunk. Yeah. And like shows up at their house, scares the kids. And they openly are talking about like, she does this because like, she is trying to basically cleanse her own sin
mm-hmm.
away. And, you know, whatever abandonment her son felt from her, probably also from the alcoholism. And even her friend is kind of like, you need to stop helping this family.
Cause our business is tanking.
Not only that,
business.
But she's like, this is addict behavior.
Yeah.
You're replacing this with this. Instead of actually like going and getting help for yourself, which you desperately need.
I wonder how much of this is the Kelly Freeman Craig of it all.
That's what I'm thinking too. Or maybe even Hilary Swank was like, I'm not going to play this character as like a church lady, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like there are some real stuff we need to talk about here too. And I just, again, I feel like that was really lovely and real and authentic to the life of people who are maybe like, overly altruistic. Is like, there is a part of it where it's like, is this really all just for the family or just mm-hmm. for the people you're helping? Like, it seems like this is also a little bit for you, but you're not really supposed to explore that. It's kind of taboo. You're just supposed to be like thankful and grateful. And even the dad being like many times telling her to stop helping, or eventually saying like, I'm grateful for what you do, but I like resent it as well.
Yeah.
Very real feeling. I imagine a lot of people feel.
And complicated. So I guess good on the movie for capturing some of that. Because thinking about it, I wasn't like, I don't know who's, the dad's unpleasant, but I would also, some lady was like, well, hey, I gave you $3,000. I would also be very weirded out and I would feel protective and wary.
And embarrassed.
That.
Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I've been taking care of my family and this woman came in within a month and like cleaned up my finances, like figured out my bills, helped me get this business off the ground. Like my daughters love her. Like it's an icky feeling, but it would be this kind of like weird resentment, envy too, that mm-hmm. is very real. And I think very like normal for people to feel in response to someone like her.
Sure. The real life circumstances informing some of this is Hillary Swank's own father was a lung transplant, was the recipient of a lung transplant however many years ago.
No way.
In 2014. Wow. She took off a few years of her work to take care of
him. That's right.
So she was gone for a while and then he passed away. That's her sort of like metatextual connection to this. For the gentleman who plays Ed Schmidt, Alan Ritchson, Reacher himself, Caroline, he is profoundly Christian.
Oh.
He's deep into it Christian.
Okay.
He has a YouTube channel called InstaChurch.
Okay.
And he's got a whole, and again, hard man to describe if you haven't seen him. His face is beautiful and he looks like a mountain. And both those things are true. Like he is what Jack Reacher is described as being in the books. But he's also got, this is why watching the movie, I was like, it's almost like a weird combo of Chris Pratt and Benedict Cumberbatch a little bit, the way his eyes are beautiful in the face. And I couldn't figure it out. And then there's all of these videos. I don't know what you would be most interested in seeing. Some say I can't be a Christian, play a Reacher. What to do with fear when it's all vapor, the first city. He's doing like mini sermonettes on his Insta church.
Interesting.
So even more so, as much as you were saying, like maybe Pratt will pivot to full time.
This guy's working on his preacherdom career.
Daring to awaken this is the description of the channel. Daring to awaken the other half of us. Let's take a look at scripture and how it relates to our lives today.
Wow.
And he's doing embracing the God paradox. What's your problem? Why woke is the most dangerous word we have today, which is not what you think. Because he's sort of
pro-woke?
Kind of. It's a video of him shitting on Ron DeSantis, but then also saying like, we're so divided. You know, it's like some of that. But he also did like arrest the cops who killed Breonna Taylor stuff during BLM.
Okay.
But because his face and body is so January 6th coded, and because of Reacher being so popular with dads,
right?
I.e. Sir kind of dad.
Yeah.
He's a little divisive for this reason, but he seems fairly evangelical in some of his, at least in some of his videos. Also, even the personal section of his Wikipedia, his wife, Catherine, their three sons, they decide to sell their home. They live on the road.
Huh?
The kids are homeschooled. They stay at Airbnbs and hotels.
What?
He talks openly about his bipolar disorder diagnosis and his struggles with it. He talks about it on his YouTube channel. So there's a few things going on here.
Wow.
With all of that.
Okay.
But, you know, as far as like, it's always interesting when you have like real actors participating in this, how many of them are doing the like, I'm a Christian now. I love
totally,
it.
Totally. Yeah. But he's
Jennifer
like,
Garner's going to church again.
It. Yeah.
He's like, I think you want to be a pastor.
Yeah. Like you are the real deal.
While still doing like the men's health cheesecake, you know, beefy spreads.
Beef diet.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole beef diet stuff. But, some say I can't be a Christian and play Reacher. I'm just going to give you a little taste of kind of his flavor on the channel.
I love telling this story. I love playing a character who creates a kind of moral ambiguity that we should struggle against as we consider whether or not what he's doing is good all the time or morally right. I think that kind of thing is fun and fascinating. And I think escaping to that world as an audience, hopefully it's as enjoyable for you as it is for me to help bring it to life. But it's funny to me how a lot of people criticize me, supposed Christians especially, criticize me for playing Reacher. As if the only TV that should exist is seeing people silently folding their hands in the pew of a church. I mean, what kind of stories are we supposed to tell? If you look at Scripture, what do you find? You see 1,000 years of an infinitely holy God holding tension with human beings as he tells the story of who he is, reveals who he is through an imperfect people. So we get stories of paganism and a war and bloodshed and ghost stories, mysticism. We see miracles and magic and we see life and resurrection and death.
And in other videos, he gets into like the Greek actually means this.
Okay.
What is this word mean, and what does it mean when we're seeing the same?
Real Bible study guy.
Yeah.
Huh.
Big time.
Nice. Okay.
So it's interesting.
It is interesting.
And he seems compassion forward, and he talks about, like, in the press tour for this, there's this other interview, I won't play all of it, but him and Hillary Swank are just doing the EPK stuff, and they're doing The View or going on the Today Show to talk about it. She talks about her dad and her connection with it. And he's like, the church is ignoring all sorts of people groups and keeping them out and marginalizing them.
Wow.
And this is about, you know, this movie is about showing people kindness. And it's a call for Christians to be kind to one another and the people that they've ostracized for too long. So he's one of those guys where it's like, maybe you're progressive because...
Sounds like he is. I mean... You're like a new breed, you know, like mm-hmm. progressive evangelical.
Yeah, but yeah. He is just one of those distractingly hot actors where it's like, you're just that. It's like every Arnold movie needs to have some line of like, are you an Austrian bodybuilder?
Yeah, yeah.
Why are, like, you,
no.
Why are you a businessman? And he's like, no, the new forms I need to fit. It's like, dog, go to a weightlifting company. And he kind of has the
go
same
be an
build.
Actor.
Right? Yeah.
That's so funny.
So that
also, did you ever feel like I kind of want him and Hillary Swank to hook up in this movie?
Well, I certainly thought maybe it was going that way.
I was like,
a few parts.
I don't think this happened in real life, so it would be weird, but like, come on.
There's this graphic sex scene in the middle of Ordinary Angels.
These two?
I want to see all your ordinary angles.
Yeah.
So.
But they're platonic completely.
Or I thought it was going to be. Something happens to her, and then she's the liver donor in some way.
That would be so crazy.
But then I was like, well, she's been drinking a lot, so maybe she shouldn't be the liver donor.
She probably wouldn't be number one.
No.
Donor.
No, I don't think so. Now, the movie ends with the sort of usual, here's the footage and the pictures of the real-life people that this happened to Eric and Michelle and Sharon, and Eric and Michelle are still friends to this day. Instead of like religious calls to action, like we've seen in some of these movies of like, here's how you can donate to the Mike
right,
Pence
or like hate. For small group questions.
Yeah.
The Mike Pence hate fund.
Yeah. I can only imagine ends on Mike Pence.
Oh,
you remember that? Like,
no.
It's like, I can all Mercy Me is a great band. It's some presidential
forgot.
Breakfast
oh,
thing.
God.
This ends on, here's how you can sign up to be an organ donor.
Yeah.
Which, and maybe it's like funded through some hateful Christian group. And it shows pictures of Michelle growing up and getting married and whatnot. The part that it leaves out is that Michelle did pass away in 2021 at the age of 30. She had a stomach aneurysm. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's always so interesting where it's like, and this was the case for Iron Claw too, that movie, the Zac Efron movie that came out a few mm-hmm. months ago, where the real life story was even way more tragic than what they put in the movie. So it's like, okay, well, maybe we take, like, there was a brother that died in Iron Claw that they cut out of the movie. They're like, we're not going to have another brother. Like, all this stuff that happened is enough. But then, like, when something is predicated on this is special because these things happened. It's always so interesting.
I know. I was thinking about that too. It's like you went this far to just tell the story of this family. One, I didn't know about the third daughter. Like that feels kind of cruel to just like ignore her life completely. I mean, you did a fast montage of mom's life. You know, she got 90 seconds. I'm sorry, it's not funny. But I'm just like, why would you not acknowledge this whole sister, whole daughter that they had in their lives too? Yeah, and then not talking about Michelle passing as well is kind of like, I get it, but also like, isn't that kind of fucked up to be like, oh, but that's just too sad. Then like, we can't go there. We can go there with all this other stuff, but like, we can't actually acknowledge that Michelle isn't with us anymore either.
Well, this is why I always feel complicated about something where the sort of salesmanship and whatever you feel about that and all these press tours about like, well, we wanted to faithfully tell these people's story, whether it's this movie or not, but like, these are the real life people. And it's the playbook everyone does where it's like, I wanted Leonard Bernstein to come inside me every day if you're Bradley Cooper. Where the whole thing is, I wanted this to be so accurate and so faithful to the real life events and the emotional truth.
So extraordinary, it must be told.
And then to which I don't think is the point of a story, if it's based on real life, is like, how true is it? Inaccurate to what it, like, I, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think Social Network is a good or bad movie based on how accurate it is or anything based on real life events. But when the sales pitch for the people making it, especially when it has to do with really sensitive stuff like this and people's illnesses and life and death stakes and issues of faith, when the whole thing is, we wanted to pay tribute to this and whatnot, it is always interesting when it departs from, and it's not like them leaving her death out of that closing montage is like an egregious sin of omission, but it does paint it differently where it almost feels sanitized of like, well, why not include that and make this whole movie dedicated to Michelle?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, there is something itchy about it. And like, yeah, no, you don't have to get every beat of a story like verbatim correct. That would actually be quite dull. And we saw Zachary Levi's movie, American Underdog. So like, you don't need to do all
another
that.
Another tornado. Okay, sure, Kurt.
But yes, like when the whole point is about the life, death, possible death of this girl. And then to just like, we're going to put that in a drawer. And you guys, the audience, aren't strong enough or don't need to know about that. Because yeah, like there is a salesmanship quality to it, or like we're trying to convince you of something still. And her actual death would like unconvince you that this was like an amazing thing that happened or mm-hmm. something, which feels mm-hmm. very shitty.
Yeah. Because it's almost like, well, we made a good movie. We don't want to undercut it. Like the emotional uplift that we're leaving you with.
Yeah.
But then that feels,
but it's like, we all have Google too.
Yeah.
And we're going to lose it one way or another. And now we're going to be looking at you like, why would you not mention that?
So if you're Michelle's sister, who's still living, or her father, and you go to this movie and it's like, they were friends
and
forever.
She got married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where the story ends. I'm not trying to be too judgmental about it. It just feels odd to me in a way where I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah. Something about that feels kind of wrong to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of the Kingdom Come movies we've talked about on this show, this feels like the best of them, right? In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I was curious to hear what you thought about it, because as I was watching it too, I was like, this is actually really good. Hilary Swank is really good. These child actors are amazing. Mm-hmm. The pacing of the story was great. It was fun. It was funny. It had the Brockovich like flavor to it, you know?
And I was straight up crying in the club.
I was crying in the club. It
like,
was beautiful. And it was like, it was so cool how all the community like was working really hard to get this done. Like it wasn't, yeah, again, some like miracle slip of the hand, you know, God intervention that happened. In fact, there were so many terrible roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you said, the community solved it. I mean, for all of these reasons, it was just such a much more compelling movie to watch than the other ones. And Even the volleyball movie we just watched too. It's kind of like
season. Yeah.
It was kind of like, what was the point of that? You know, like, I understand this is a very, we've talked about this before. Like, this is touchy with true stories of like, this is very important. And like, her life is worth remembering, obviously. But the thrust of the story is just kind of like, and then the volleyball team won, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, I don't know if that's like a huge net benefit or a big lesson for the rest of us, you know,
huge net benefits, right?
Yeah. Or it was enough to merit, you know, like this big movie treatment of it. This was, in mm-hmm. my opinion, like mm-hmm. in hearing the story and what they did and how many people were involved and how many, like, I don't know, and this, all the various systems of oppression that we all face and to some degree or not, like with the medical system and everything and how people overcame that, like that was really compelling to mm-hmm. watch and really like genuinely inspiring.
Yeah. And it really made me feel something while I was watching it. And there was a sort of, you did feel at least the intention of having some fealty to the nuance of both of those characters being yes. pretty imperfect and not in a lip service-y way where it's like, well, they yelled sometimes. But Kurt Warner might as well have been Christ on the cross in that movie. He was just like, I'm great and I'm going to be great. I think he like blew off his wife one time in that movie.
Yeah.
If I remember at all.
Right.
But otherwise it was a very pristine little picture.
Yeah. And sports inspiration stories are truly never going to inspire me. They're possibly the lowest on the totem pole of inspiration movies.
Well, except for one.
What?
Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans.
You like Remember the Titans?
Yeah, I like Remember the Titans.
Yeah. I like that movie a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I thought it was like pretty great.
I thought it was pretty decent.
Or maybe my bar was so low. I was like, wow.
I think so. No, but just the fact of like, at no point was I like, we're in real shitty hands right now.
No.
Like, oh, why are we doing this crap? And the way it ramped up, if something ends well, I find this more and more. If something ends really strongly, I kind of forget about the first parts being iffy or whatever.
Yeah,
or
not
that good.
Slow. Yeah.
If it ends well, I'm just like, that was pretty good. And I really got most of what I was looking for out of Ordinary Angels, which on her Instagram this week, Amy Grant said, tomorrow is the day. I absolutely loved this movie. And I think you will too. The story makes you laugh, cry, hope, and cheer. Great jobs to all my friends involved. Bring the story to a theater near you. You don't want to miss this one. XO, Amy.
XO to you, Amy, too. You know, that's another reason this movie is good, is there's no like random ass Christian cameo in it either, of like the local mailman, you know, is like Stephen Curtis Chapman for no reason, you know, and be like, keep an eye out for this sunny day. What?
I love his song, Keep an Eye Out for This Sunny Day. This is my favorite song.
Like, they don't go that low with mm-hmm. it either.
Well, and the soundtrack is not faith-based music.
Yeah, it's not like riddled with like worship hits.
It's kind of annoying music. And maybe there's like a Switchfoot or Lauren Daigle song on there somewhere.
There is a Daigle.
There is? They got Daigled? Oh, they got Daigled. They got Daigled.
But what a perfect artist, you know, a bit of a fence sitter herself. Depending on if there's a bike nearby.
Oh, God forgive me. If someone ever describes me as like, Kevin, yeah, a real fence sitter of a guy. That is so funny. I was really won over by Swank. It made me miss her. We haven't hung out with her in a while, you know?
What a great actress.
And watching some of the press stuff with her, I'm just like, I like you.
She's so likable.
Where is she? She was in Logan Lucky, New Year's Eve. We all remember that. She was in this great movie called The Homesman. I bet you've never heard of The Homesman. I never heard of it either.
No.
It's Tommy Lee Jones starring in and directed and written by Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh.
And it's him transporting a bunch of women across the American West in the 1800s.
Okay.
And I only watched it because Meryl was in it. So I was like, well, let's see what she gets up to in this one. But it was genuinely, it was a beautiful movie. I loved it.
Cool.
But all that to say, Hilary Swank, really great in that.
Yeah.
Jesse Plemons greenlit.
Swankissance is upon us, hopefully.
I hope so. I mean, Holmesman was 10 years ago, so I think it's a little slow roll.
Easing her way back in.
Yeah, get her on some good TV show or Fargo or something.
I was like a little worried, like, oh, why is she doing this like Christian movie stuff? Mm-hmm. But then actually seeing the role, I was like, no, she's still got a good picker.
I get it from her perspective. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just... Where do I stand? All right, here's my routing number. Here's my...
Yeah.
It felt like there was a little more to it.
And can I say one more thing also I like about this movie? Is there's no angels in it.
Well, there sure were, Caroline, because it was just the people.
Yeah,
but
there's no like weirdo angels.
Who are you thinking of when you say there's no... You're imagining like one... Stephen Kirschner. I guess there are Christian music cameos and stuff.
Yeah, like random Christian music cameo, or like the guy that like helps you and he's really nice, but then uh-huh. he disappears when you turn around.
Yeah, but what movies like that have we covered?
I just feel like a movie with angels in the title that's a Christian
movie.
Right. Like
yes.
You're kind of like, uh-oh, we're going to get like angel
like
story
the magic
stuff.
Janitor who's like, you need a shine? And
yeah,
then,
yeah.
Yeah, but what's your...
Fuck off, janitor.
Hey, get out of here. You don't deserve to live.
Leaves you a Bible and disappears. You don't deserve to live.
Yeah, I'm mad at janitors. It doesn't need to be that clean.
Yeah. So again, they didn't like, I feel like they didn't dip into like some of those little low-hanging fruit of like Christian movie tropes.
I love a community coming together, and maybe that's a trope, but it was one that was weirdly for the context of the movie worth seeing. It was yeah, weirdly refreshing.
It was.
To see it in this one. I was like, damn, I was really moved by yeah. it. And all the pieces working together. And the kindness of CEOs and millionaires giving their private jets away.
The way five of them were like, you can have mine.
And maybe we should keep their taxes right where they are.
Because what maybe if we a little bit didn't lower? Have their private jets that they sometimes let us use for our dying daughter.
Yeah, maybe this is low-key super right wing movie. Like,
what a miracle.
Medical debt's okay if Hillary Swank's on your side. CEOs are nice. And we got to do rules 5 through 6.
Oh, right. Okay.
5 through 9.
5 through 9. Yeah. Okay. Here's one.
Number 5.
If you're about to leave the party, like go piss like way before you're about to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say goodbye and then be like, oh, shit, I have to piss.
Oh, yeah. And if you want in
Nathan
to, oh my God, now you're just text him that.
All right. I'll just text him.
You don't have
Sorry.
To use this platform.
I didn't
to
mean to
talk
put him on blast.
The man that you live
I've
with.
I've done it myself too.
And also say goodbye to the host, even if you want to Irish everyone else out.
Always say goodbye to the host.
It's just manners.
It is.
It's just manners. Rule number 6. Don't use shame on your dog because it doesn't actually work. And they will be the little
Have you tried it?
I have. I've done the nose into the piss as a shame technique and said, no, no, bad.
On your dog?
Yes.
Okay.
On my dog.
Uh-huh.
Rule number 7.
Rule number 7. Here's what speaking of pet things I learned recently. Mm. Don't change your cat food all of a sudden out of nowhere. Sometimes that means that they're going to poop everywhere.
Oh, no.
Or throw up, actually.
You're not sure which it is. It's so bad.
It was throw up. I don't know why I said poop. Sorry, Scampi. Put my whole family on blast here. baby boy, you're up next.
Well, Elmo.
You're supposed to like kind of do it gradually if you can. So
if
like
you switch the food.
Mix the old food with the new food slowly over a few days.
I found that to be the case too.
Ease the transition.
When I left him with a dog sitter who one of the other dogs she was dog sitting for ate his food. She gave him different food.
Right.
And he Jackson Pollocked all over the bathroom and the bedroom.
Damn.
Which is sad because that meant he was truly sick and not doing it as vengeance.
A bit.
Yeah. It was not a bit. It was like, I'm sorry. And it made me feel sad.
Oh, no.
Rule number 8 is... Can you let me finish?
I'm sorry. It's also me like hanging here with my mouth open too. I'm like, what is it?
Our last episodes in person are just going to be like full on.
Be like laying down.
Like a symphony coming in from the other side. We're going to have a maestro over there, I tell you that much.
It came into me. Okay.
It came into me. Rule number 8 is if you cast a mom, maybe make her more than 20 years older than the actor playing her son. Because it's not going to read. Or literally cake on prosthetics and makeup. Speaking of maestro. Give her a nose.
Respect the moms.
And rule number 9, if you go to the Americana to watch a movie, maybe check in with your buddies to see if they're there too.
Check your friend's location.
Yeah.
They're probably there.
I don't share my location with you.
I don't share my location with anybody.
I share my location with one man.
And that man?
Zach.
Jesus Christ.
Who's kind of the Jesus Christ of my life. I think we give this movie a holy toast.
Holy toast.
I think we do.
Yes.
Which is disrespectful to the EP of the movie that we're not shouting him out. But
all right.
Such is the case.
You had your money.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
We are welcome. Do you think he saw this movie? Do you think Dave Matthews went to watch?
No, they screened it at
Ordinary
his house.
Ordinary. Yeah. Speaking of Dumpuary, that Dave Matthews band
truck. Dumpuary!
All over that boat.
Oh, no.
All right, we're dimming the lights in here. We're lighting the candles. We're not here to promote our stuff or plug our projects. We're here to lift them up to the Lord, including whatever we're enjoying in secular culture. Caroline, what do you have to lift up?
I don't have, like, a good new secular culture thing to lift up, really. But you know what? I will lift up, double check if you're an organ donor. Go ahead and sign up. Super easy.
Are you an organ donor? Can I ask?
Of course.
Oh.
Absolutely. Why not?
I'm not. I need to.
Are you really?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, this lift up is specifically for Kevin Tabs Porter.
Hey, that's a callback from an episode that either is coming out three weeks from now.
It.
Okay. She says the T stands for tabs because I have so many tabs open on my Chrome.
Open up one more tab. How to be an organ donor, California. Help, please, Mr. President.
Mr. 85-year-old president.
Yeah, double check your organ donor status. Simple thing you can do. You don't need those when you're dead.
No.
Give it to someone who does.
Yeah, that would be vanity. No.
If you like Alyssa Sabo, even just a little bit.
That's a good way to put it.
Go be a freaking organ donor because she wouldn't be here.
Without an organ donor, I wouldn't get on a JetBlue flight and every time take a picture of the screen and watch her little commercials play on and being like, you're on my flight.
Yes.
And she's like, who?
Lift that up. Also lifting up universal hair care.
Hey, I think Sharon's going to lift that one up for you with a little hairspray. Universal hair care.
God damn it.
President Barbie is running on a platform of universal hair care.
Fire me. You know what I meant. No more medical debt.
You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. And I will lift up Tree of Life. I saw a movie called The Tree of Life. Have you heard of this movie?
Yeah. Wasn't that like a really weird movie? Am I thinking of the same thing?
Okay. It was. And while I was watching it, I thought, this is the best movie I've ever seen in my life.
Sorry, Maestro. You're out.
Hey, what do you mean? I'm getting edged out by the Tree of Life.
I need it to be in the mainstream.
But can the tree sing? If does the summer sing in the tree? And if it doesn't,
shout out to
sing?
Bradley. I hope you're getting that Oscar. You and Gigi have been working hard.
I don't know if it's happening in
our
lifetime.
And your daughter. You brought out all the girls.
Tree of Life is weirdly Christian in a way where it's like, I don't think we should ever talk about it on the show.
Okay.
But afterwards, I was like, am I a Christian again?
Uh-oh. Whoa.
Yeah, it really
fascinating.
Had an effect on me.
Wow.
It was quite profound. Terrence Malick, an interesting artist, Christian man. Oh. So check out his movies. Days of Heaven, Badlands, etc., etc. Lights, Camera, Porter, signing off once again.
No, I like it.
At this point, we've watched Dune 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve. Dune 2.
Denis Villeneuve.
And you can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere, patreon.com/goodchristianfun. For more Good Christian Fun, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Caroline, fresh hot Patreon every week.
It's fresh and it's usually hot.
It's usually hot.
Yeah.
You get a little fast and loose, Kevin and Caroline.
Caroline, thanks for being my ordinary angel on the podcast tonight.
Thank you for being my ordinary angel.
With minimal interruptions from your body.
Thank you for being an angel with all of my new sounds I'm bringing to the table. Kind of catchphrases, almost.
Every time a co-host burps, an ordinary angel gets it. It's dick sucked.
Oh, in that case.
And there's nothing left to say except for, okay,
I love you, Emma. Amen.
Now watch this drive. And I think in honor of the executive producer of this movie, we should go out on this song.
You cannot quit me so quickly. There's no hope in you for me.
Have you ever heard this song in full?
No.
No corner.
This is the song. This is the space between.
Oh, this is Space Between.
Yeah. Feels weird to hear it in context, doesn't it?
It always does now. Yeah. Diving in.
Hey, you know what, Dave? Thank you for Ordinary Angels. This is the song we'll hear when we're ordinary angels in heaven. We'll crash into me. And we'll see you next week on the podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.